G-Sin, that was a nice introduction. I appreciate it. But my mother's not a wimp like we talked about anymore, because I've had a visit with her and I've enjoyed her very much. Seeing these little stained glass behind me reminds me of a halo. And then I remember quickly that my sponsor told me that I was only 6 inches from the halo to the noose. So I don't want that to be I don't want that to be a halo. Oh, gee. Like she said, I had said this was my first talk on a Sunday morning. And let me say this before I get into that, is that the first talk I made in 6 months is true, but it was a captive audience. They were prisoners. So you all can get up and walk out, but they couldn't. One of the neat things about talking on a Sunday morning, I guess, is that I can say anything I want to about the other speakers and nobody can rebuttal it. But we have had a great convention up to so far, and I'm real grateful to say that I was a part of it. And I want to thank all the others for sharing with us, because it is a neat experience from being up here looking out than it is sitting down there. And I'm grateful that I can do this. I'm very grateful. Also, one of the neat things about talking on a Sunday morning is I got to have a couple of days of experience with some of the people here before I stood up here and I can share with you. I had the opportunity to go to the little town, Murfreesboro, to shop Friday. And one of the girls, I went in, I forgot I had on my badge, and we went into a place called the Old Time Pottery. And this little girl says to me, said, what is that? And I said, and then I had forgotten I had it on, you know. And I said, that's a convention I'm attending. And she said, well, what kind is it? And I said, Alcoholics Anonymous. She said, oh, I'm sorry. I said, well, you need to be sorry. And then the other little girl spoke up and she said, at Mom Eagle, she said, well, you know what kind of media? This other little girl said, well, I kind of feel sorry for you. Mine Eagle's kind of a dull town. Said that most people there drink. And I said, yeah, but the one I'm attending doesn't drink, honey. I remember I said it was Alcoholics Anonymous. So that was a neat experience for me. I do want to thank the committee and thank Milton for asking me to share with you this weekend. It is indeed a pleasure and an honor for me, because a little over 27 years ago, my sponsor talked here. And I was about 3 months sober, and I had just started working, and so I was unable to tag along and come with her. But I've always, in the back of my mind, had Mont Eagle that stood out in my head. I said, one of these days, I'm going to go to Mont Eagle. And here I am. 27 years later, I'm here. So that's been a blessing for me. And I don't think Milton would have any objections to me saying that he just celebrated his 25th birthday Saturday night. And I think that's wonderful. Yeah. And since I've known him since he came in, that means that we've been friends for 25 years and we're still speaking. Isn't that one? That's fabulous. That's one of the other miracles of this program. You can be friends for a long time and still speak. Let me get my composure a minute and let me share with you. Okay. One of the neat things about coming up here is that it's, like I said, in AA, it's always been a new thing for me. It's a new experience, and I've met a lot of new people, a lot of old friends that I've seen, and it's been a wonderful, neat experience. And I think it's my first roundup, and a lot of the friends that I know's first roundup, and I'll say this much, we'll be back, because it's been wonderful. Three things I'd like to get out of the way before I get into my story, and that is that I'd like to give you my sobriety date. I hadn't had a drink since January the 11th of 1971. And for this, I'm very grateful. And the other is that anything that I say to you from this podium is strictly my opinion, not the opinion of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's based on my experience in this program. And the third thing that I usually forget is to introduce my husband. So James, would you please stand up? Thank you. Also, I remember my sponsor telling me when I first started making talks, she said, remember the four things that I want you to never forget. and that you're not up there to entertain, and you're not up there to impress, and you're not up there to teach or preach. You're just up there to share your experience, strength, and hope. And that's what I try to remember to do. My name is Mary, and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the Unity Group in Memphis, Tennessee, and it's the best group in the world. And if you don't think your home group is the best group in the world, then you better get another one. I've always been told the importance of finding a home group and joining is because of the commitment that we make. Most alcoholics don't like commitments, and that's one of the reasons we have to get a sponsor, is for the commitment. Because we're usually freelance. We do as we please, as a rule, and we never have any discipline in our lives. And that was one of the first things I was taught, was to find, get me a home group and become a part of it. And I did. I usually try to share my experience, strength, and hope by following the guidelines that the Big Book says to tell you what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. It should be fairly easy for me to remember what I was like, as I just had a visit with my mother last year, and she refreshed my memory a lot. Some of the things that she told me, I didn't remember. And this just proved to me that this is a disease of perception, and that it's not what happens to me so much as the way I react to what happens to me. And this is as true today as it was then. Since she moved to California when I was 16, she really wasn't around to see me through the last stages of my alcoholism. But she quickly reminded me that she had seen me drink and drunk on several occasions. And I was 19 when I took my first drink. And I drank for 19 years. And when I had 19 years of sobriety, I was ecstatic. I felt like I had really reached the end of it because I had been sober as long as I drank. And God, that was a wonderful feeling for me. And I had graduated from high school, and I was working for went to work for the telephone company. And the reason I remember my age and the where I went to work and how old I was because these two friends, because it was really my first vacation, real vacation, and also that these two girls and I had trained together, and we had to go on an early vacation because they went by seniority there. So we'd only been, I guess it was in April that year, April of 52, that we went on a vacation. It was my first train ride also. We had decided to go down to Biloxi and Gulfport, which is south of Jackson. One but about a 50-mile trip, I guess, but it was a big deal to me. And it must have been fate, because the first place that we went to was a club car. And I had never had a drink before, and I really kind of looked down on people that drank, especially women, you know. I just didn't think. I used to preach to my aunt that women just don't drink and don't smoke. And I was just a Miss Goody Two-Shoes, you know, kind of sickening, like, when I... And since I looked down on it, well, I sat there with them and they ordered something to drink. I said, I'll have the same. It didn't occur to me not to order anything. I'll have the same, and I don't know what I ordered. I have no idea. But I remember that I was very impressed with the club car. I had never seen anything like that. The atmosphere, the smell, everything just really impressed me. It reminded me of, it was looked sophisticated to me, as I had always wanted to be sophisticated, and that's what I perceived it to be, sophisticated. The only thing that I can say that after taking that drink that I remember was that it made me feel warm inside, and it made me feel like I had slowed down talking. I've always been kind of hyper and talk fast anyway, and it just made me feel like that I had was slowing down. And I was very comfortable, more comfortable with these two girls. And I guess the greatest change that I can remember is that it changed my attitude and my outlook on alcohol. All my life I had been told that drinking was bad for you. You don't drink. Women don't drink. And in high school I looked down on the people that drank, and I never thought I would. And then when I felt that feeling that it gave me, I remember thinking, well, gee, they've been lying to me. There's nothing this makes me feel this good could be that bad. It really had an impact on me. And I don't remember from then on until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, that alcohol wasn't a part of my life. Even when it got bad, it was still a part of my life. So from then on, I decided that I was going to start thinking for myself. At any rate, I transferred from the telephone company in Jackson to the telephone company in Memphis. And here I just seemed to gravitate toward the people that liked to drink. And by then I had taken up smoking. And gee, you talk about sophisticated. When I had a cigarette in one hand and a drink in this hand, I really thought I had arrived. That was the epitome of sophistication. And here recently we have a neighbor. I'm getting ahead of myself, and I want to share this with you when I think about the drink in one hand, the cigarette in the other. She's a little older than I am, and she lives next door to us, and I come home from work, and she's sitting out there on her front porch with a cigarette in one hand and a drink in the other. And I think, wow, one day I would have really envied her, you know, for being able to do that. And I'm still baffled how at her age she can continue to do both. But she does. The people that I ran with, and let me say this, I met a man, make a long story short, I met a man, we had a whirlwind romance after about 6 months, and we got married. And he could drink me under the table, I can tell you. But I didn't know anything of it, neither one of us knew, had a clue about alcoholism, we knew nothing about living, we just did what we wanted to do. This marriage lasted for 13 years. And after writing my inventory, I was able to see that this marriage was doomed from the very beginning, because you take two selfish, self-centered, practicing potential alcoholics, you know, you got chaos going, and that's what we had. The only thing really I can say good that came out of this marriage was two little boys, wonderful little boys. I didn't think so at the time, because I was very frightened of the responsibility of having to raise those two children. And he and I were both very selfish and self-centered and didn't know anything about responsibility. But that's the only thing good that I can say today that came out of that relationship. During this time of our marriage, before it ended, I looked back and invited my inventory, and we had tried a lot of things to make this marriage work. But every time that we tried anything, we always did it with a drink. So you can imagine how far we got. We got nowhere. We just ended up arguing was a rule. I remember one time when our life was going downhill, and we thought, well, we need to go do something. So we decided to go to church. Well, we couldn't go to church, I couldn't, and drink. Because all my life I had been taught, you don't want to ever be two things, a hypocrite or go to an institution. And unfortunately, I did both. I violated both of them. So we quit drinking. We didn't quit because we thought alcohol was a problem or the drinking was a problem, but we didn't want to be hypocrites. Well, we didn't change our friends, and we didn't change our way of doing things, and so we were miserable. And we kept going to church, but we didn't know what was wrong. But we decided that after 2 years of this misery that we just had to quit, so we quit church. And we resumed drinking again. And our friends that were drinking, and we enjoyed it. We didn't realize it, but see, alcohol had become such a part of our lives that, and I don't know that we were alcoholics yet, but we weren't too far from it. After taking my inventory, I can see that during this time, somewhere along the lines, I did cross over that line into alcoholism. We went camping. We thought we would do things with the children. Perhaps that would make our life better together. And they were like 8 and 6, you know, and by this time alcohol was such a part of our lives, we always stopped and got a bottle and got some ice and got some setups. And we drank all the way down there. So you can imagine when we arrived, the condition we were in. We woke everybody up in the tent ground. And it was about midnight, you know, we was drunk and playing the radio loud, and I look back on all those things, and yet I never thought that alcohol was anything wrong with it. You know, that was just the fun. Because, see, I equated fun with drinking long after it ceased to become fun. I equated that. After we camped, and then there were some other things that we were doing that they just slowly fell by the wayside. The neighbors that we had anything to do with were the ones that liked to drink the way we did. In the beginning, we had neighbors that drank lightly like we did, and then as they didn't drink like we wanted them to, or like we had become drinking, then we got other friends. And slowly and maturely, things just got worse and worse. I had gotten in trouble with the law, and my husband looked down on that, and he really took advantage of that, and he never let me forget it. He'd call me a jailbird right in front of my children and just embarrassed me to death, and I just went to my room. And the only way I knew how to deal with that was to drink more. I didn't know how else to handle anything like that. I'd never been taught any other way. So I just drank more. Well, after a period of time, he decided that he had had all of me he could stand, so he just walked out and left me. Well, honey, when he walked out and left me, my world just really fell to an end, and my life became a horror. I no longer used setups, I can assure you, to drink. I drank for oblivion, and I didn't know what else to do. I had taken to the heating pad and the sofa in my bedroom, in my den. And I was always hurting in my back, and I had dropped out of everything that I had been involved in my neighborhood. I no longer was a part of it. Well, fortunately, I had some neighbors who had a meeting about me, and they decided that the reason that I was in such bad shape, somebody better go over and see me, because no one had seen me since Scotty had left, and the reason I was in such a bad shape was because I had a brain tumor. I don't know where that came from, but I was grateful. I don't know where it came from, but I was grateful for it. So they decided the one who had known me the longest should come over and visit me. Well, this girl came over, and we have joked about this since, and I said, yeah, you do straws and you lost. But she knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous or about the way I was drinking. And the only thing that she knew was about a friend of ours had been going to this psychiatrist. And she thought, well, maybe she cried all the time like I was doing. And she thought, well, he's helping her. Maybe he can help you, Mary. Would you consider going to see him? And somewhere out of the blue, I said, yeah. Now, I didn't say yes because I thought I was an alcoholic. I just guessed somebody came over to see me. And I thought, well, you know, that's the least I could do was to go. Well, see, this is a blessing in disguise because I can look back after writing my inventory and see these series of events that's taken place as God working in my life. Because I didn't have any idea why I said yes. And to give you an idea of the condition I was in when I went to see that doctor, we were sitting out in the lobby. This was the old Gartnett Ramsey Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee. We didn't have treatment centers then. This, I guess, would be the closest that you could call a treatment center. And we were sitting out there in the lobby, and I said to them, look, I said, you go into that doctor first and you talk to him and you explain to him how nervous I am and how fast I talk. Because if you don't, he's going to think something's wrong with me. And they did. They went in, and then it came my turn to go in. And I went in, and he said, Mary said, your friends told me how nervous you are and how fast you talk. But have you always had that slur? And I said, what slur? I was totally unaware of it. I'd had it for so long, I didn't have any idea what slur he was talking about. At any rate, this is what happened. And I went to see him was on an outpatient basis for about 7 weeks. And I ended up going in there as an inpatient. And I was tied to the bed for 6 days of those, 6 nights of those 3 weeks, 4 weeks I was there. I was in there 29 days. And while I was in there, these friends came to see me every night. They were mutual friends of my husband's and mine, and they were he was in the program. He was an alcoholic, and she was an Al-Anon. I knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous, and they came to see me, and they brought me the message of recovery. Well, you know, in the big book, it says if you can find a prospect that's still jittery, they'll be more receptive. Well, I fit that picture. I fit that picture, I can assure you. So they came to see me and brought me that message. They brought me the big book. And they began to tell me about themselves. Well, see, I knew that he had quit drinking 5 years prior to this. I just didn't know how. And I didn't know why either. Why did anybody quit drinking? I couldn't imagine. And I remember my husband and I discussing Forrest and Christine, and we didn't want to have anything more to do with them because they didn't drink. They were not fun anymore. But they proceeded to tell me the story of AA and the recovery story, and I'm very grateful for that. I just lost them both 3 years ago, and it's, I have to give them credit for saving my life, because indirectly I feel like they did. And the thing that really impressed me mostly was when they came to see me was the change in attitude and of them I saw. You know, this is a program of attraction, it says, and I was attracted to the change I saw in them. I didn't know why. I knew nothing about the 12 steps or about the program. But I did see that. And I can remember them talking to me and saying that, I think you're an alcoholic? And I said, oh, I don't think so. I said, I'm glad to see you all, but please don't say I'm an alcoholic. I'm a little nervous, yes, but not an alcoholic. Because, see, not knowing what an alcoholic was, my thinking was an alcoholic was a Skid Row bum. And I guess that was par for the course back then. And I certainly didn't think I fit that description. I learned after I came in AA that the bars can be invisible in your mind in Skid Row. And I had to learn that. But they came to see me. I was in there 29 days. And when I got out of Gartnett Ramsey, it was the week before Thanksgiving of 1970. And I said, they called me and said, would you like to go to an AA meeting with us? And I said, well, yeah, I'll go. Now, I didn't say yes because I thought I was an alcoholic, but they had been so nice to me in Gartnett Ramsey, that was the least I could do was go to one of, quotation mark, their meetings. And on December the 6th of 1970, I went to my first area meeting in Memphis, Tennessee. And I was glad we didn't have cups like you were talking about the other day, Audrey, because it would have been broken, I can assure you. I remember walking down the aisle with a cup of coffee and a donut, and that donut just rolling all over. I was so nervous. And I'm sure that coffee cup would have been broken, too, if it had been porcelain. I wouldn't get involved in AA. I remember they told me I enjoyed the meeting. It was good. I wasn't that impressed with it. I didn't. As Christine had told me prior to this when I was in Gartnett Ramsey, that my bread wasn't done. That was a saying they use in, your bread's not done. So since my bread wasn't done, I got nothing out of that meeting. And they said, well, what you need to do is you need to go to some closed meetings. I said, oh, listen, I don't want to get that involved now. I appreciate all you've done for me, but don't push it. I don't think so. And so I said, but I will go to some of your open meetings with you. So once a week I went to, between December the 6th and January the 11th, I went to 6 or 7 open meetings once a week. And they would pick out them, and I've done this since then with people, the best speakers they could think of that would get through to me. But you know, when you hadn't surrendered and you hadn't become honest with yourself and your bread's not done, it makes no difference who you hear. But I did hear enough, but somehow, for the grace of God, I made it through Christmas and through New Year's of 1970. And in January, I was reading the big book, and I didn't understand what they were talking about, but I had heard some things at these meetings that attracted me. The people and the stories they told, and I thought, that's good for them, but it doesn't apply to me. So I was reading in the big book, and I got to the part where it said, if you don't think you're an alcoholic, try some controlled drinking. That was exactly what I needed to read. I mean, exactly. So I proceeded to go to the liquor store, and I got me a bottle, and needless to say, you know what happened. When I came to the next morning, I was nervous. My heart was palpitating. My hands were sweaty, and I was nauseated, and I thought, God, I cannot go through that again. I didn't know it at the time. I wasn't aware of it, but I had reached my moment of truth and my surrender. And I thought, well, you know what? I think I'm going to call those people and go to one of their closed meetings they've been talking about and find out what I can do about this, because I don't want to live this way anymore. So I called them and told them I'd like to go to one of their closed meetings. Now, I didn't tell them I had drank again. That was the reason for it. I just told them I wanted to go. I wasn't that honest yet. But I had surrendered, and that was January the 11th of 1971 that I did go to attend my first AA meeting. And I have not had a drink of alcohol since that day, and I'm very grateful for that. to me, the best way I can describe that is it's like I have heard, it's a journey. I learned the journey of recovery when I went to my first meeting. And it rocketed me into a state of fourth dimension that, as the big book says, is indescribable. There's no way I could have thought that would happen to me. But that's what happened. And I'm not saying that things hadn't been a bit of roses since then, because it hadn't. I have peaks and valleys and my ups and downs. But yet, there remains in me the thought, since I've surrendered, that I don't have to take a drink to deal with it, no matter what it is. Some of the things that I learned when I came in that I want to share with you at the beginning was that I was told that the importance of getting a sponsor, finding someone who had the type of sobriety that I respected and that I admired. And it didn't necessarily have to be anyone I liked, you know. Said really and truly it'd be better if you didn't like them. Well, I can remember hearing this woman after I had been in about 3 weeks and had gone to meeting after meeting, and that wasn't very comfortable. I didn't enjoy that either. I didn't want to get that involved. I really wasn't planning on doing that. But they told me that if I did keep going to these meetings, that one day I would want to go. And I said, gee, you mean one of these days I'll just want to go to a meeting? Because meetings just sounded boring to me. And they said yes. So I kept going until, sure enough, that was true. It happened. So you might say I found Alcoholics Anonymous on a dare, the way that it penetrated into my life. Because I found out everything they told me was true. It did get better. Well, I heard this speaker after I'd been in about, three weeks. Now, let's see, about three months. And she was going to, she talked at the Coon Supper in Blytheville, Arkansas. And I went, no, I'm sorry, I was 3 weeks. And I went to hear her. And the thing that really impressed me when hearing her talk was that she talked about her feelings. And I could relate to that. And I liked what she had to say and I respected it. So when I was sitting down in Blytheville, I never will forget, it was upstairs back then in a little over the drugstore. And I was sitting in there and I reached out in my purse because I was still smoking then. And I reached over in my purse to get a cigarette. And I looked up and Louise came and sat down beside me. And my God, I was in awe. I couldn't believe it. You know, how could she read my mind and know how I was feeling? But she sat down beside me and she wrote me a note and she said, I would like to take you to a meeting. I thought, how does she know? She's reading my mind. That's what I wanted her to do. And I wanted her right then, you know, to do it. I wanted her to touch me and make me well, I guess. And it doesn't work that way. Because I remember her telling me, you know, that's one thing that you can't do. If I could give you 10 years right now or 20 years, I wouldn't do it. And I thought, well, why? That sounds unreasonable. She said, because I wouldn't deny you the experience of living those 10 years. That made sense to me. But it didn't at that time. So I came back to Memphis, and I had not asked her to be my sponsor. But she is a lady that goes to the Harbor House. She can talk to me a lot better than I can. And she goes to the Harbor House, and she went every Monday night. And I would tag along behind her. And I went with her. And on this one occasion, she was talking about this halfway house that she went to in Washington, D.C. when she came in. And she said at the end of this hall, like this corridor here, was a big mirror. And that the caption under that mirror said, be honest with me. And I thought, wow. She said, you can be dishonest with your spouse, with your children, with your friends. But you got to be honest with yourself if you really want this program. And it doesn't take 99% honesty. It takes 100% honesty. And on the way home from that meeting, I remembered that I had drank again and nobody knew it. See, because I had given the impression that I had been sober since 70, not since January of 71. That'd make it sound like I had been sober a year longer. And I think that had I not, if I had stuck to that, had I not become honest and told her, you'd be having another speaker this morning, I'll tell you. I think after I told her that, and looking back, I can really say this is when I became willing to go to any length. Because I had burned all my bridges behind me, and I knew that I had to find another way to live. And so I had become honest with her, and she had agreed to go to take me to a lot of meetings, and my sponsor believes in the big book, and she believes in going to a lot of meetings, and this is what I did. The only thing that puzzled me was that I liked her, and they had said, if you like your sponsor, you probably got the wrong one. So I told her what I had heard, and she said, no, I think you misunderstood them. What they meant was that if you liked everything your sponsor says, you got the wrong sponsor. Well, I sure didn't like everything she said. She hurt my feelings an awful lot. I mean, she said things to me like, you know, you have two ears and one mouth. Doesn't that tell you something? Back then, pull any punches, I tell you. I was like Bob, and I heard the other night, and also Carl. They weren't suggested to me when I came in. They were told to me. And I'm grateful for that because I needed to be told. I didn't need the suggestions. Gosh, all my life I had had things suggested, and it didn't work. So she told me what I had to do, and she proceeded to share with me in the big book and share her life with me. And I didn't realize what a road of recovery I would be on, and I'm very grateful for that. She did tell me this would not be a bed of roses. There would be ups and downs, but whatever came along down the pike, I would not have to take a drink to deal with it if I didn't want to. And I had surrendered, and I had reached all those things that I had been through with a drink and a pill, so I didn't want that anymore. I knew that this had to be a better way to live, and I was grateful to hear what they had to say. Gratitude, she told me, was the foundation of this program. And if I couldn't find something to be grateful for every day, then I better take another look at things. And I have never forgotten that. I guess one of the things I remember in the beginning that I don't hear too much anymore, and that is we don't analyze, we utilize. Don't analyze, utilize. That meant a lot to me. And that this, of course, is a spiritual program, and it's three ways we are: physical, mental, and spiritual. And I was bankrupt in all departments. I had never really had a prayer life, even when I went to church those 2 years. I didn't ever develop a prayer life. And I'm not saying anything wrong with the church. This is Sunday morning, I'm in a church. But no, it wasn't them, it was me. I had to learn that. The church had the right idea, but I didn't know how to react to it, and I didn't know how to deal with it. Alcoholics Anonymous had to teach me how to do that. I heard that once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. So I might as well get it out of my mind. There came me no lurking notion that one day I can drink alcohol successfully. They said, if you stick around this program long enough, you're going to find someone dumb enough to go back out there and try it again. And they won't think it gets better, but this is a progressively worse disease. They're not going to get better, but let them do it for you. And fortunately, I had this one guy that I had been in, 6 months when he came in, and he did it all. I can assure you, he helped me more than anybody, because any doubts that I had about what the book said, he had them, and he proved them. He went out there and did them all. And he and I became friends, so he'd come to see me, and he would tell me how successfully he was drinking. And really, he baffled me sometimes, but he would come back to AA after a period of time. But on one occasion, he didn't. And he had been drinking, and he was telling me how he could control it, how he had learned to eat his food and before he drank, and how he was doing all these wonderful things, and he could drink. And I said, well, Milton didn't do that. I said, well, Julian, the big book says that once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. He said, yeah, but I'm not an alcoholic anymore. And he said, and I can do all this. Well, I said to him, I had been in by this time about 3 years, and I said to him, Julian, well, I'm going to take it on myself to say that if you can drink successfully, like the big book says, for 1 year, I want you to come to our group and tell us how you did it, because we don't understand that. And he said, can I really do that? And I said, yes, I really think that my group needs to hear all that. Well, you know, he lasted 9 months. Scared me to death. I thought, oh, my God. But needless to say, and now he just celebrated his 21st year, I think. But he was very helpful to me. some of the highlights that have happened to me, I don't have time to get into all of them, but some of the things that happened to me along this journey was that after I got my divorce, 3 years later, I remarried, and I married a man in the program, and after 5.5 years, he had a heart attack, a fatal heart attack, and died. I had never experienced the emotion grief before, and this was incredible because I didn't want to pick up a drink to deal with it. With the help of my friends and my sponsor and my group, I was able to deal with that. 3 years later, I married again. And 5 years later, he had a fatal heart attack and died. It seemed like there was something about those things. That's why I forget. This wasn't him, as you can see. But this time I didn't do as well, I'll tell you. I didn't do as well. I didn't take a drink or I want to do anything like that, but I was angry with God. I thought, well, how in the world can God allow a person to go through this kind of pain twice in one lifetime? I couldn't imagine. And I'm sharing this so I can tell you, if you've gone through any kind of experience like that that's been devastating, just hang in there because it will get better. That was the only thing I had going for me, was I remember learning that. And so I didn't want to drink, but yet I was so unhappy. I wasn't like I used to be. The joy, the serenity and all was not in my life like as it once was. And I couldn't understand it because I wasn't drinking. I was going to meetings. I was going to conferences. I was reading. I was doing everything that I was told that I should do. But somehow or another, that was missing in my life. One of the books I was reading described this man talking to this priest, and he said to him, I want to tell you I've lost my faith, and I want to tell you why. And the priest said, okay. He said, well, I went on this fishing trip in Alaska, and I was sitting out on this iceberg. I got lost from my party, and I was on this iceberg, and I was all by myself, and I almost froze to death. And I prayed and prayed, and I almost froze to death. He said, well, apparently you didn't. You're here now telling me this story. What happened? He said, I can explain that. He said, these two men came by in a boat, but God had nothing to do with it. You know, and that just hit me right between the eyes, because I thought, wow, that's what's wrong. I was not grateful that I had not had a drink in 2 years since that happened. And I began to look at things differently and get out of my self-pity, and I was able to talk about it and feel some gratitude that I had once had and I didn't have for 2 years, and that was what was missing in my life. And I was no longer angry with God. I was more grateful that he had allowed me to deal with this without drinking. The thing that I remember most, I think, during that time is that what I was experiencing, I never wanted a cigarette. I had quit by then, nor a drink, and that was absolutely fascinating. But like I said, I wasn't grateful for it. And when I became grateful, it seemed like the joy, and it took a while, but that the joy and the serenity and the peace of mind began to come back into my life. And I can say today, from that experience, I think my faith is even stronger than it was then. But at that time, I had another devastating experience happen in my life, and I thought, well, I just lost my will to live. You know, I thought, what is going on? Why is all these things happening to me? But I learned from that experience also. This program taught me that no matter what comes down the pike, you can deal with it as long as you don't take a drink. And that's what I did. But as the joy and the serenity began coming back in my life, and I had not worked with others, that was another missing ingredient in my life. I didn't feel like I had anything to share with anybody else. So I didn't work with others. And the big book tells us that's a necessary part of our program, is working with others. And when all else fails, we work with others. Well, see, I completely forgot everything that I had learned like that. And I didn't apply it to my life. The spiritual tools I did not pick up and use, but I didn't take a drink. So I guess that's why I can identify with the people that are white knuckling it. You know, you don't drink, but yet you're miserable if you do, and you're miserable if you don't. So I had no desire for that. What am I like today? Well, I'm still gratefully struggling that road to happy destiny. And just recently in January, I celebrated 25 years at my office. But if it wasn't for this pen here, which represents that, if it wasn't for this one, I wouldn't have that one. This is my 27-year medallion, and I know where it came from. I still pick up that today, pick up those spiritual tools laid at my feet. This morning when I waked up, when my eyes opened, I asked God to direct my thinking. I turned my will and my life over, which is what I did 27 years ago. I've done the same thing. The big book tells me that I have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And I take that literally, and I do that. I try to follow the directions and the guidelines in the big book is more today than I ever did before because I got more to lose. And I feel like it has become such a part of my life that, and my thinking, I can remember a lot of times, and it's not that everything's perfect all the time. I'm not trying to imply that, but here's some things that I use in my life that has come up. There's a piece, a paragraph in there that says after step 11 that we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. And I'm able to bring that to my mind, bring it forward as a result of reading those things. That's, to me, the most important reason for reading all that and letting it become a part of you is because you will remember that. I can remember my sponsor telling me, when you change your thinking, you'll change your entire life. And I thought, gee, will that ever happen? You mean I was very skeptical that I could ever do anything about my thinking. And she said it takes discipline, but as you learn and you replace those old ideas and you start thinking this way, it will become a part of your life. It will become a habit of it, habit to you. And I think that's what the big book tells us on, of course, I didn't know anything about the big book that much then. Not more than I need to know now, but I do know more. It says that what used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. And nevertheless, we rely on it, you know, because it becomes an intuition to us. And I think that's what it is today. I think those thoughts that come in my mind, certainly I didn't put them there. It came as a result of this program and what it's done in my life. Before I close, I do want to share two things that have been very important in my life, and two of them is my grandchildren. I have a little boy and a little girl, ages 1 and ages 3, and they are the apple of my eyes, most proud grandparents can tell you. And another neat thing that happened to me back in March of this year, my son turned 37 years old, my baby. He was 9 when I came in, my other son was 12. And when I came in, like I said, he was 9, and I took him to dinner when he was 37, in March the 15th. And we were sitting there, and I always, the boy's the one that's still out there that we've talked about, out there drinking. But that day, he was sober, and he's been in every treatment center in Memphis, I can tell you that. And he's broken my heart a lot, an awful lot. And we all know from being an alcoholic, and he says he is, that it's just a matter of time and he's going to get worse again. And we went to dinner, and he said, Mother, I have always wanted to tell you, since, you know, when Daddy left us, and he said, I've always wanted to tell you how much I respect you because you could have put us on welfare and you could have had food stamps, but you chose to catch that bus and go to work. And I said, well, son, I really appreciate it. He said, I really respect you for that. And I didn't want to say to him, well, honey, I just found out God in AA. You know, I wasn't about to go on welfare. I was going to do everything I could to make life better. And even though I didn't have the resources, I did catch that bus and went to work. And that's why I won't tell anybody that you can do anything if you want to stay sober. If you've surrendered and you want a better way of life, you don't have to wait till you have a car or wait till so-and-so happens, a better job, because I had a job that I was working 6 days a week, and I can tell you that wasn't very pleasant, and especially when I had to get up in the morning at 5 o'clock and catch the bus at 6 o'clock and go to work. And I did that for 9 months before I got a car. Today, like I said, I'm very, this isn't the same job I just celebrated my 25 years at, But I was able to, as a result of this program, to do that. I'm grateful for my son that he was aware. This came through the perception of a 9-year-old's eyes. So hopefully that can be a turning point for him, that he will remember some of the good things, because he's always remembered the bad. He's never remembered the good. So that was a first for me. And I'm grateful that he can see that. Like I told you, I'm a grandmother now of two. One is 3 and one is 1. And this son has never, to my knowledge, had any kind of drinking problem. He doesn't smoke. He doesn't have any bad habits that I know of. And I've enjoyed him. He's a fine son. I can relate with him today. There was a time when I had lost their respect that I couldn't do that. But today I do. I have his respect, and he asked my advice even on some things. But many times he'll say, "Well, you don't live here. I don't want to hear that," when I tell him something they need to be doing. But he and I have a great relationship, and I'm grateful. And I have a daughter-in-law that I'm just wild about. In fact, I don't think that I could have picked a daughter that I would have chosen any more than her. And we get along beautifully. But I guess the greatest thing that I can say that this program has given me is the ability to stand up here as a sober alcoholic woman, as you were talking about, and say that Alcoholics Anonymous is one of the greatest things that's ever happened to me. I do want to close. I've related to a... Pardon? Oh, okay. That's ironic. My next door neighbor that I was telling you that I would have envied at one time is Mrs. Gartlett Ramsey. She has no idea that I came in there. You know, I was a patient at Gartlett Ramsey. Her name is Ramsey, and her husband was the owner of the founder of Gartlett Ramsey Hospital. Isn't that ironic? And I want to say to her, you know, there's no place for you to go. Now you're going to have to come to AA. You can't go to Gartlett Ramsey. They've torn it down since then. But anyway, I want to close with something about a housewife who drank at home. That was what I identified with when I came in. And it has a sentence in there at the end of it that I would like to share with you when I close. It said, "I had been brought up to believe in God, but I know that until I found this AA program, I had never found or known faith in the reality of God, the reality of His power that is now with me in everything I do." And I want to thank you again for asking me to share with you, and thank you for saving my life.